Elvis Costello, great song.
Yeah, What's Wrong with Peace, Love, and Understanding. Very, it was funny. I mean, Jesse played it, and I was like just going to ask him to play it. And he did without me asking.
Yeah, you know what they say about great minds.
Right, right. So, yeah, you know, so definitely the right point. So, What's So Wrong with Peace, Love, and Understanding? Of course, it sounds like, you know, hippie and not in a nice way, you know, naive maybe, but... as we see politicians jumping all over this in Europe and even in America, where really they don't have what business of it is it? Say that you're sorry, say that you're your hearts are with families of people, and shut up, you know, stop making political capital off of it right away, would be my answer. But and I kind of mentioned all these kind of things about how we've been brutal in many senses, you know, Europe and America eventually, and today, because America, you know, is the global power, before it, Britain, France, whatever, have been riding pretty hard, the world, including the Middle East, and being very unfair, very brutal, not allowing them any freedom or any opportunity so much, over the years. And I'm always loath because people would say, oh, you're excusing these acts of terrorists. Not at all, not at all. But maybe it's important to realize that if we want, we can't ask people who have a grudge, who have a problem, to always act with kind of civil disobedience, let's say, protest, non-violent protest. I mean, we should, but it's counterproductive to ask them to do that while we are bombing them.
Right.
That's just, yeah.
Are respecting them.
We're taking the argument, we're destroying the majority of people in those poor, beleaguered, you know, suffering parts of the world that would like to negotiate, would like not to have do any violent action, the majority. But we're taking away their argument. We're allowing the ones who do things like shooting up a magazine in Paris to tell them, look, they don't understand any talking. You know, there's European, French, American, whoever happened to be the person in question. There's no point in asking them nicely. They hate us. All they want is to, you know, we're giving rise to this polarization of their violent crazies and our violent crazies. And sure, we are more powerful right now, by far. But in the long term, not only that could change, and do we want to really live in a world in which these kind of attacks happen, but also, as I think Thomas Jefferson pointed out a while ago, that it destroys ourselves. It's a cancer for ourselves, right? If we start having police state, start having more surveillance because we're afraid of a handful of crazies. Americans have one of the things I always loved about America before coming, even, you know, how this kind of suspicion of authority. I thought that was one of the most endearing, to me at least personally, attributes of America. But we're being played.
I think we embrace that.
Yeah, but then it gets counterproductive. Then we're talking about yeah, central government, and we forget what the corporate world is doing to us. And by the way, the corporate world owns the central government, so... who's the corrupt government? Hell yeah, but who is corrupting them? You know, think of the cowboy movie. I know kids don't watch cowboy movies anymore. My kids refuse to. I want to show them some classic John Ford and stuff. They're bored. They're not interested. It's a shame. It's some wonderful stuff. But old school kind of, right? So you have the cattleman, you know, some kind of evil, corrupt dude, right? Who wants to just take the land of the farmers, the honest farmers, and he, you know, corrupts the sheriff, and then we have kind of, you know, John Wayne steps in, somebody, right? And he's the not corrupt sheriff, and of course he has to, and he has to first kind of fight the corrupt sheriff, but then, you know, the hero remembers that that's not enough to take care, to undermine the corrupt authority. Who is corrupting them? Who's the one who paid them to do these bad things to us? We have to go all the way and stop the entire chain. But What's So Wrong with Peace, Love, and Understanding? Didn't we talk about religion and stuff before, right? I mean, what about that? Remember there was this gentleman, and I think he was a man, just like Muslims, who had the amazing political scientist called Jesus Christ, right? remember the other cheek thing? So you, when you get slapped, you need to give the other cheek.
Oh, right, right.
So what
right.
was he, a fool? I mean, it kind of sounds silly, right? What is this, right? Somebody punches you, punch them back. That's what I tell my daughter. But the thing with what that parable says, as I understand it, is precisely political science. It's conflict resolution, right? Just like in the Good Friday Accord in Ireland, the longest ethnic strife in human history, as far as I'm aware, Ireland, right? Northern Ireland and most of Ireland, always dominated by the English, eventually England and Britain. And they finally got peace after like 700 years when the powerful side, you know, was willing to give up more than the weak side. See, the English stopped saying, that's the one thing I like to give credit to Tony Blair, because otherwise he's, I have very little good things to say about him. But the basic strategy, and he's a religious man, interestingly enough, Christian, that in order to sue for peace, when you have one very powerful military group and the other weak being under their boot, the way to stop the cycle of violence is for not the powerful person, the powerful group to say, I'm the powerful one, so you better do what you're told if you want me to stop killing you. That never ends well. The powerful side has to give the other cheek in a sense, right? And that's an act of power, actually, not an act of weakness. The same thing they did in South Africa. The white reformists decided that, under the leadership of F.W. de Klerk, decided that let's talk with Mandela, not torture him in jail. And let's, we have to give up more. We have more to give up. And that is, I don't know, it's a nice parallel. That's kind of how I understood the whole,
Well, that was a good lesson that the rest of the
cheek thing.
Countries in the world should,
That's
pay attention.
That's the big mistake of Israel, by the way.
Right.
That you gotta give up more. You have the power. You can smite them, you know, your fifth biggest army in the world against a bunch of refugees. I mean, give me a break. Of course you can exterminate them, but is that what you want to do? I mean, there's ethical question, no doubt, but even if you're completely what's called realpolitik, you know, just what's smart, I don't care about ethics. It's not smart. It doesn't work. There'll always be a few that you'll just push them on the ground, deny every possibility of negotiation. The powerful, it's kind of simple, basic rule of conflict resolution between a powerful and a less powerful is for the powerful has to give up more. You should learn it in the kindergarten, I suppose, in some sense, right? I mean,
That's the one topic that you don't really see in schools unless you're in undergrad is problem resolution.
Mm.
That's probably something that should be, in high schools or how to get along.
Yeah, that's a whole other, it's a whole other, when we have all these problems with bullying and instead what we have today, I mean, it's really, I've said it on the show many a times. I mean, coming from the East European Jewish side, having seen some of these things and being personally interested in rhetoric and doing research on that and propaganda, to see that our societal problems in the school of precisely bullying are addressed by the schools with poster campaigns reminds me of Soviet Russia. You know? it's ridiculous and ineffective, no doubt. And the schools need to precisely, absolutely right, to first of all, to teach a conflict resolution a little bit wouldn't be a bad idea, but also they'd have to also practice it. I think that it's difficult if the schooling system is structured hierarchically, when the kids have no rights even resembling that of a citizen in a democratic state, then it's very difficult to, it's duplicitous, right? The kids kind of get it, even if they can't articulate it, they kind of get that this is BS here. Right? That they are being bullied by a teacher, so they turn around and bully. Everybody who's been in the military in their lives know how that works, right? I mean, the sergeant gives the private hell, and the private turns around and gives it down to well, the private first class then turns around and give it down to the private and all the way down to the grunt who has nobody to turn back against.
Right, it's all part of indoctrination.
Well, it builds this hierarchical system. I mean, an army is an institution devised for a very particular purpose. It's one of the problems, to go back to what we were talking before, of having a militarization of the police. You know, where instead of a community, remember, Jay was here kind of talking about this notion of a community-based police force that answers to the people who they police.
Right, right.
That's called democracy. I mean, if you want to structure your life according to a militaristic hierarchy, then you should immigrate to, I don't know, North Korea. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, sure. You know? Oh, I finally watched it, by the way, while preparing my classes. On one screen, I had my LMS preparing my assignments and stuff, and on the other, I watched the interview.
Oh, the interview.
I find it. I watched it. Yeah, I have a copy.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, no.
No,
not really.
I think they even said that at the debut. They said
it was awful. It was really not even funny. Even by Seth Rogen's standards, it already is pretty low right there.
Yeah.
It's not even funny, frankly. And what I struck me a little bit is the North Korean looked better than the Americans there. I was all of a sudden like, wait a minute. It's kind of insulting to America, not to North Korea, in a sense. But yeah, it was awful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not that. I mean, again, it seems to come out of the interwebs. You know, it's kind of I like that word because it's so.
Of course, with this latest Paris thing, you know, it really makes it look
new
like
story,
total
right?
fools. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Incidentally, the North Koreans didn't hack Sony.
Right, it's pretty clear. Yeah.
North Korea had nothing to do with it. I wouldn't surprise if, I mean, maybe they said it might be a disgruntled employee, and then I think Sony probably jumped all over it, so that people won't talk about the very embarrassing, sexist, racist, and downright disgusting memos of their executives that came out. Instead, we make it all this kind of, oh, 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 freedom of speech.
Right.
While in fact, you know, it was a promotional campaign almost. We live in a weird postmodern age.
I personally think that, They were anticipating something like that, and they were trying to use it to their own benefit. It's just that it got out of hand. Because, I mean, let's face it, something controversial coming out, boom, Sure. Everybody wants to go and see it. Yeah. Money.
Well, yeah, right. But the fact that it goes, and then the President of the United States actually joins in and with punishing North Korea for, I mean, the North Korean regime are ecstatically happy.
I'm sure they were laughing.
Every time we stop talking about them, they do something so that we keep fearing them.
Right.
And it's a horrible vicious circle, right? Because those military junta of doom running, you know, North Korea, don't want the inevitable, hopefully one day, inshallah, as the Arabs say, you know, as the Muslims say in Arabic, there will be a unification of South Korea and North Korea that will liberate the North Koreans from that horrific regime under which they live. Absolutely. But every time we do all these saber rattling and all these kind of hostilities with North Korea, I mean, they're loving it, and we do exactly what they want us to do in that sense. And whenever we forget about them and there's a little bit too much negotiation going on and reasonability, is that even a word? Then they immediately do something stupid just to, you know, scare Americans. I mean, what happened? Why are we so scared all the time? What do we have to be so scared about? Our leadership also, as I was saying before, want us scared, keep us scared. If we feel confident, self-assured, enthusiastic about something, no. Immediately they have to present a new nightmare for us to be scared of.
Well, it works for the propaganda. It actually works for the Koreans too, because anytime we, you know, get up in arms, they'll film bits and pieces and show it to their people and go like, look.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming to get us.
Yes, of course.
You know, so it works for them and it works for us, you know, to keep everybody here.
I mean, that's, in fact, the way we negotiate, I mean, you know, it was a difficult situation, of course, but just like the wars in Vietnam and the Korean War and everything was, in a large sense, a failure. But it devastated, I mean, I hate to, it's a really ugly story.
That's
part
the
of
forgotten
American history,
war right
what,
there.
What was done to the citizens of North Korea. So they were in such a state that allowed this group of nasty, you know, dictators to, and their military junta to take over.
much like happened in Vietnam and Laos and other places where, you know, we bombed them well beyond the Stone Age. Yeah?
One of the things that we haven't understand yet is the fact that conventional war is a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. You know, you just can't go arbitrarily bomb somebody to smithereens and expect them to come out bending over.
No.
Because it just doesn't happen anymore. And in the way the world is integrated with each other.
It never did, man.
Yeah.
In World War II, there was a Marshall Plan after the war, yeah?
That's right.
Smart. And that's military people. I mean, I actually worked and I almost took a job. I know people are going to think this is the most crazy thing they ever heard if they follow this show. But I almost got a job at Virginia Military Institute. Can you see me in Virginia Military Institute?
No.
Probably not. It would have been a temporary job anyway. But I was teaching at Washington and Lee University at the time, and I got good, you know, reviews and stuff. And the two schools are extremely different, but neighbors, you know, in a small community. So everybody knows everybody. But that's where the Marshall from the Marshall Plan came out of. And he ran the school also for a while. But that was smart again. That was a smart military, you know. But it wasn't some bleeding heart liberal, you know. It was a military man. But he understood that we must reconstruct it. Otherwise, what are we going to get? Like communist guerrilla-run ruins? I mean, Germany was like a great big parking lot after World War II. People suffered horrifically, by the way. Let's not forget that. Of course, we think about World War II, we think about the suffering of, you know, the Jews, the homosexuals, the gypsies, and we don't think enough about those who suffered more than anybody else. The Russians certainly died by the numbers more than anybody else. Talk about 6 million Jews, and we should. We should also talk about the 500,000 gays, and, well, nobody knows actually exactly how much, but almost, you know, again, more than 500,000 gypsies, but well over 20 million Russians, civilians, yeah? So, but the Germans too. So yeah, did they not necessarily successfully oppose the Nazis? They gassed most of my family, but I will still be more than happy to say, I mean, the Germans suffered. And they were most of them weren't directly responsible in any significant way, more than we are responsible for what's going on in the Congo today, with 10 million people were macheted and killed. Not so much directly by us, but by guys that, you know, we armed and support and finance.
And of course, this is something that the media keeps quiet.
Congo is, oh God, Congo is a real, real ugly story. And literally, their Hitler is invited for cocktail parties by, you know, their quote-unquote Hitler is alive and well. You know, leader of Rwanda gets invited to conferences about peacemaking all from Washington, D.C., Paris, Berlin, and London. So he, at least, you know, Hitler married his girlfriend and shot himself in the head in a Berlin bunker.
And now he's in Argentina.
I doubt it. But again, you know, the other cheek, being smart about it, realizing that conflict resolution is a necessity for us all. Even if you happen to be the top dog, things will change. So don't keep it. And yeah, you know, channeling the other cheek. Flashing lights.
Flashing lights.
Go overboard? No, I don't think. I think people are reasonable. I have to believe that.
I'm sorry?
A lot of ugly stories. Apparently people are calling, asking for songs. They're really like annoyed at my ramblings. Maybe we should play a song.
4 o'clock.
When is it finally over? All
right. Yeah, not right now. We're in the middle of a talk show. Thanks, man. Bye.
Oh, well. Well, we'll play another nice song, hopefully. But, yeah. The Pope was on about it. Maybe finally I'll become a religious man. I'll go like, become Christian or something. Will that be like...
Hey, you never know.
Who knows what might happen?
The new and improved version 2.0 Testament.
Yeah, I'll be a bishop or something. Dig the robe. Yeah, if I go Christian, I think I'll go Catholic, definitely. Because, you know, old school.
Yeah.
They've been around for a long,
long time. And they have the most power,
right?
They have the most power.
And they have a pretty cool pope, all things considered these days. So we got to give him some credit. He stepped a little bit forward with dealing with... I mean, you know, I think he would have been sitting here with us, would agree on most things, you know? It's not like...
I'm sure he would, you know, and it's like every politician that we know, you know, they probably would agree with everything you say here.
He has to be pragmatic. I mean, he runs the most conservative with a small C institution on the planet. I mean, they've learned the hard way over millennia that you can't change too quickly. It's like a giant tanker. It has to be done very gently.
I think a lot had to do with their money.
Well, they sure collect a lot of money.
They were like, "Oop, the funds are going down. Let's change our rhetoric."
Hey, you gotta run diversify. The operation, right? I mean, you know, we can and should be cynical. Just like, go back to the point of Rushdie. You know, we should poke fun at everybody and be willing to have fun poked at us too. That's the harder part often, right? Everybody's great about poking fun, just like your buddy Bill Maher, right? I mean, he pokes fun at everybody. Except if it's one of his taboo topics. Then all of a sudden he gets like self-righteous and angry. You know? And you know, maybe he doesn't have to. Maybe he doesn't have to go shoot somebody, right? Because he's got a world fifth biggest army in the world doing his shooting for him.
That's true.
Enough for you, right? If you don't have any powerful organization backing you, then it's harder. Of course, you know, and this is not, in any way a justification of these kind of violent actions. What it is, though, is let us not forget the mass amounts of people who are not doing it, who are suffering on a daily basis and are still open to peace. And instead of reaching out to them, we ignore them at best or bomb them at worst.
Now, here's something you sent me, and I just opened it, actually. And it started off with, 13 years ago, a draft dodger from Texas stood on a pile of rubber in New York City and promised that the people who knocked these buildings down will hear us all soon. Of course, the people who flew the planes into the World Trade could not hear anybody as their remains were buried in the rubber beneath Bush's feet. It's an interesting article. Okay. Let's see where it's going. A month after September 11, Donald Rumsfeld stood in a podium in front of a $2 billion B-2 bomber at White Man Air Force Base in Missouri and addressed air crews of the 509th Bomber Wing. Wow. That sounds...
those beautiful planes, right?
Sounds drastic. And he said... I said, so of course this is before they took off across the world to misdirect the vengeance on the people of Afghanistan. Rumsfeld told them, we have two choices. Either we change the way we live or we must change the way they live. Okay, we choose the latter. And you're one of the ones who will help achieve that goal. Since then, the United States has launched more than 94,000 airstrikes, mostly on Afghan and Iraq, but also on Libya, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. Rumsfeld's plan has undoubtedly achieved his goal of changing the way people live in those countries, killing a million of them, and reducing tens of millions more to lives of disability, disfigurement, dislocation, grief, and poverty. That's pretty intense. A sophisticated propaganda campaign has politically justified 13 years of systematic U.S. war crimes, exploiting the only two human failing that George Orwell examined in his 1945 essay, Notes on Nationalism. As quote by Orwell, the nationalist not only does not approve of atrocities committed by his own side, but he has a remarkable capacity for not even hearing about them. Mm-hmm. Very well put. He listed torture, the use of hostages, forced labor, mass deportations, imprisonment without trial, forgery, assassination, the bombing of civilians. The U.S. has committed all these atrocities in the past years, and Americans have responded exactly as the nationalists all well described.
Not all, hey? Not all, no.
Yeah. But some of the horrors of the United States invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan found their way into the conscience of millions of newly war-wise Americans, and President Obama was elected in a peace platform and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Isn't that something? To the deep disappointment of his former supporters, Obama has overseen the largest military budget since World War II, and eightfold increase in drone strikes, special forces operations in at least 134 countries. Oh, we're worldwide, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's the thing. And Clinton, by the way, he started in Congo. It's all the same.
Twice as many under Bush and a massive increase in this special service night raids or manhunts originally launched by Rumsfeld in Iraq in 2003, which increased from 20 in Afghanistan in May of 2009 to 1,000 per month by April, 2011, killing the wrong people most of the time, according to senior officials. Okay, so like Eisenhower after Korea and other presidents, after Vietnam, Obama turned to methods of regime change and power projection that would avoid the political liabilities of sending young Americans to invade other countries. But the innovations of Obama
still send. I mean, let's not forget also all the American soldiers that have to suffer through this, both hurting and as well as mentally scarred. And
It says the U.S. dropped more tonnage of bombs in its secret war on Cambodia than it did on Japan in World War II. As Cambodia imploded in the orgy of genocide, I like the way this guy writes, the CIA directors of operations explained that the Khmer Rouge recruiting has been most effective among the refugees subjected to the B-52 strikes, which goes to what you were saying.
It continues today all over. I mean, there's some things that are different, but then there are many things that are very similar. Since Truman, above all. Truman was the real... some would say maybe before, right? I mean, we invaded Philippines in 1900 and massacred a million people. You know?
But he was a true imperialist.
Yeah, Truman was a tool, was the first tool of the military-industrial complex. They didn't want to demilitarize after World War II.
Of course not.
And the thing is, I mean, all of that stuff, often people will kind of get defensive, but so let's just consider, it's all failures. It's failed us. It destroyed our economy, for decades, and the last war, these wars are catastrophic, it destroyed our freedoms, destroyed our democratic system, redistributes our wealth, and of course may have millions, responsible for the death of millions. But also destroying America. So I'm saying, I mean, just like I learned that in the Middle East, when I was beginning to wonder, when Israel, what the hell are we doing? It's not, the poor Palestinians, though, that's important too. We're human after all. This is so stupid. This is only going to end in tears. So when we look around us and see the shambles left of this great country, I think not too late. I don't give up until I'm buried.
And people don't understand that it takes a massive amount of money to maintain that kind of force and power of oppression over people.
Every single 320 million of us could be living, we would be flying our own military jet if we didn't send them to bomb civilians all over the world all the time.
Right.
Only it wouldn't be military. It'd be like really cool. it would be, we have the capacity as human beings. But instead, for that we need democracy, essentially. That's one of that precious bird of the liberal state. And again, I'm talking like the free market type of state. And I entertain a lot of problems. Free market is at the very least, I accept that it's a very fragile animal. So and it's easy to destroy, and it flutters here and there, but doesn't last for long. It has to keep on bringing people into the fold and giving opportunities and rewards. But if it becomes corrupt and an ongoing military empire, bottom line, with Truman, I think America built an army for World War II, but, and of course, enslaved 20% of Africa and of course exterminated 12 million Indians. Yes. But it wasn't a global empire, and going into the imperial empires do not last. They require constant conquering. They're not self-sufficient. They have to conquer, steal, kidnap all the time. And they tend to implode. And that was a bad path. So this notion of, it's not just about, we're the evil empire. I mean, no. We were. Okay, accept it. Reform. Yesterday, I watched a movie with my students, A Great Place, where it's a kind of an irreverent kind of movie, considered to be kind of Our director of the library, when I ordered it for the library, kind of looked at me funny and made slight remarks. He's a great guy. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate his slight remarks. It's Iron Sky. It's a movie. It's a kind of a semi-B movie. It's Finnish. It's about Nazis on the dark side of the moon. It's slapstick. It's funny. It's great. But the bottom line of it is that it teaches us kind of a lesson that we are all at least potentially susceptible to being Nazis. It's kind of who we are as human beings. The trick is to realize it and to become reformed Nazis. That's the hope for humanity. You know, in a sense, right? Understand that we are all evil. And once again, I'm like, theological, like, it feels
but
weird.
But it's true.
Original we'll have sin. The I'm telling capacity. You, I'm turning Catholic. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
We should get some wine and some bread afterwards, you know?
Maybe. I'm a little overworked here. But seriously, right? I mean, there is that original sin. I mean, I'm allowed my interpretations. This notion, and that's true about the economy too. I mean, recognizing the problematic paths and before you recognize you're on the wrong path, you don't even know that you need to change direction, you know? So you keep plugging along forward down the toilet.
Yeah, the way that
things are today for the majority of the population of the planet. Americans are beginning to feel it too, I think, and there is a lot of upheaval, and you know, you have people started off once again, you know, the contrast of America, you know, our young black people are in the streets of Ferguson, Missouri and beyond, raising some hell, and I don't think they're gonna stop. You know, I mean, again, as historian realized that moments, whether it was the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the progressive change that make more people better off than even worse off, shall we say, it's never one day. Later in the history books, you have a date to remember. But it really happened over even some generations, typically, and a lot of abortive attempts that didn't work out well and changes that turned the wrong way and... But I think the wheel is turning. I'm trying. Otherwise I'll lose all hope, you know, but I believe still that the Americans might, and we must have America. It cannot happen from the outside. America is so powerful that the world depends on it.
It needs
to reform itself.
If we can just get rid of religion, that's all part of the problem right there.
You're talking to a half convert now already, so I don't know. Religion serves its purpose. Again, what kind of religion, right? Religion does a lot of good, but it can also do, it's almost, I could say, and I don't mean it disrespectfully, despite Salman Rushdie's, admonition, religion is somewhat of a tool. I mean, I am actually a pretty secular guy. I'm not shy about it. And I just admire the culture of many religions. I don't think there is a supernatural entity.
I think it was Einstein who said that the religion in the future will probably similar Buddhism because it doesn't have a real structure. Well, it just has a guideline on how to live.
But he was a socialist atheist Jew, you know, the best kind.
Yeah, that's true.
People don't like let's say it like it is, yeah. But on the other hand, look at the world today. The 21st century is becoming, God, which one somebody needs to remember? I'm sorry about the reference, but if you Google this French intellectual, I can't remember who said the 21st century will be religious or it won't be, or something along those lines. So in fact, what we're seeing is the major religions going radical, the fusion of conflict, rising of conflict, the political economic conflict gets fused into religious conflict. We're going back to the 16th century, an era of, you know, corruption, bloodshed, murder, inquisition. I mean, so it doesn't look good.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not joking. I really think the role of America in this is critical. I'm not holding my breath in Europe. I think Europe is going to go into a dark place now. And sure, when we see the new, what's it called? The head of the Republicans in the House being like an ex-Klansman, being exposed as an ex-Klansman, it's pretty depressing. And when you look at the Democrats, you know, proving their mettle by being even more imperialistic and more pro 1%, anti the people than even the worst of the Republicans. It's not encouraging. On the other hand, I think there's a significant population So you have, the different, unhappy people, I think are increasingly talking to each other. So you have, libertarians talking with socialists, because they both fear the concentration of power as they should, et cetera.
There is some dialogue, and it has been going on for quite some time. The problem that I have with it is that it's not moving fast enough.
Yeah.
But I do have a song.
Yeah, play a song, man.
That pretty much explains what I just finished saying about we should get rid of our religion, and hopefully people out there can absorb it and learn something from it. Here you go. It's by a band called XTC. Yeah, this came out, it came out in the 80s, and, it's a band called XTC, right around, Ramones,
I remember people, I remember it, but I never owned it. An album or something like that, but yeah, that's, I can see where that could cause some controversy, but I feel, I'm not like, like I said, I do not believe in any supernatural creature until proven otherwise, you know, or at least, you know, like, right, if a bearded guy shows up from the sky and slaps me around, then I'll have to change my mind. But that doesn't change the fact that religion is a very important central phenomenon to human history and very much part of our culture, our psyche, the way we see the world, our philosophy. It's big deal. And there's so many ways of interpreting it differently, and religions themselves change so much. I mentioned the Crusades before, that the Christians were actually the crazy bloodthirsty nutters at the time, but it should be known that there was Crusades also Christians against Christians. It should be recognized that, until the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, didn't really consolidate his power until Crusades were actually part of it. Pretty late in the, you know what, into the 1200s. There was still, I think, in 12 something, there were Crusades where they went from down to southern France because to get the Cathars. So are the Christians. But generally, Christendom, the vast majority of Christians believed, like Muslims still do today, that Jesus was a prophet. The whole Trinity thing, that the song kind of pokes fun at.
Fun, I know.
Which is pretty magical, no doubt, was developed later as a bunch of humans. They're oh so very human. We're sitting around in their beautiful robes and coming up with this stuff. And that doesn't, you know, it's an interesting way of looking at things, and it's not stupid really when you look at it in its context. It's a sophisticated argument. We're not taken literally. Kind of, you know, as in a children's television show where there is, you know, magical creatures flying about and unicorns and what have you. These are philosophical arguments. But again, you know, so even Christianity changes dramatically over these people, interpret it differently, and so is Islam, and it still has multiple factions. And when things aren't going well, typically nasty stuff comes out. And it's happening all over the place because the world is facing multiple crises. What's the plural? But, you know, if we kind of rationally put our heads together, we should be able to deal. But then we have to stop being played by fear-mongering politicians, not respond viscerally and violently, and essentially repeat the same movement of these murderous nutters in Paris.
Or being caught up in the rhetoric. And a lot has to do, personally, at this point, I'm blaming technology for it, because technology is really good, but then it can be bad, and bad in a way is that people get caught up in, whatever message people, and they just go crazy, and it just keeps multiplying. You turn on, right now, the internet, you type in anything in there, and all of a sudden it's like, they're blowing up Paris, and all this kind of stuff. And, I made a comment the other day to a friend of mine, old as well, and we both agree on the same thing, is that internet used to be a lot more interesting when your screen was just black and green.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you were able to put together alliances of friends and get together. None of this Facebook stuff where somebody makes a comment and you don't even know who this is.
Yeah.
I remember when I got into it, we're actually meeting people at the beaches and stuff and hanging out in the whole bed.
Yeah,
and
we have meet up and stuff. You know what? I think it's not the tool. I mean, that's a perfect place to, it's 2 minutes, so I'll make it really quick. It's all about economics, of course, It's all about the means of production. All of these, Facebook is a wonderfully effective tool of communication, and others like it. The problem is who owns our information, who allows us to link, who has the management, who controls these robots, And sadly, not unlike what we thought in the 90s, that it will be us, the individual, who controls the army of robots roaming the internet, agents, etc. These are corporate entities that do not have our interest in mind at all.
Of course
so
not.
It's about ownership. It's the same problem that used to be in the industrial revolution, in the feudal times. The technology is different, so some things are different. But bottom line, it's about the political economy.
Yep, in somebody's pocketbook. Anyway, we're getting close top of the hour here. Just a reminder that we're always here from 2 to 4 every Wednesday.
Almost always.
Yeah, almost always, yeah. Punkonomics, you know where to catch us, punkonomics.org.
Sometimes we're more coherent.
Okay, exactly. We're just starting the year, so we're just, you know, recovering.
Yeah.
Anyway, Facebook page, Punkonomics, you know, what can I say, and of course, you can always send comments to, Dr. Balak at Dear Balak, right?
What, on Twitter? Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah, Dear Balak, but yeah, or on Facebook or on the punkonomics.org. I mean, you don't even have to know addresses anymore. You just Google it.
Yep. So, WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. I'm going to go ahead and leave you with, another song and make you think. See you again next week. Ciao for now.
Bye bye. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, I guess John Lennon has to walk a little bit before he gets on to sing. Come on, sing, John, sing.
The bird.
He's probably upset because the other day somebody played a version of Lucy in the Skies with Diamonds from the Flaming Lips, and it was horrendous. Anyway, here we go.
The program did not reflect the views or opinions of this station, its management, or employees. The preceding
above us, lonely sky. I hope some